Okay, so we're reading from text number 22. Tva anupatam kulayam idam atma surit priya vach Tvadanupatam gulayam idam atma surit priya vach. Tvadanupatam gulayam idam atma surit priya vach. Tvadanupatam gulayam idam atma surit priya vach. Charati taton mukhe tvai hite priya atmani cha charati taton mukhe tvai hite priya atmani cha charati taton mukhe tvai hite priya atmani cha Tvadanupatam kulayam idam atma surit priya vach. Charati taton mukhe tvai hite priya atmani cha. Na bata. The word bata means alas, so when you go and buy a pair of bata shoes, you can think, alas, what have I got here? Ramanti aho asad upasanayatma ano nabata ramanti aho asad upasanayatma ano Nabhata ramandya ho asarupasana yatma hano Yad anushaya brahmanti puru bhaye ku sharira vritta Yad anushaya brahmandyuru bhaye kusharira brita Yad anushaya brahmandyuru bhaye kusharira brita Nabhata ramandyaho asadu pashana yatmahano Yad anushaya brahmandyuru bhaye kusharira brita Tvad anupatam kulayam idam atma surit priya vach Charati tandottaton mukhe tvai hite priya atmani cha Nabhata ramantya ho asadupasana yatmahano Yadanushaya brahmantyuru bhaye ku sharira brita Ad you anupatam useful for serving Kulayam, body. Idam, this. Atma, self. Surit, friend. Priya, and beloved. Vat, as. Charati, acts. Tata, nevertheless. Unmukhe, who are favorably disposed. Tvai, in you.
hite,
who are helpful.
Priye,
who are affectionate.
Atmani,
who are their very self. Cha, and
na,
not. Bata, alas. Ramanti, they take pleasure. Aho, ah. Asat, of the unreal. Upasanaya, by worship. Atma, themselves. Hana, killing. Yat, in which. Worship of the unreal. Anushayaha, whose persistent desires. Pramanti, they wander. Uru, greatly. Baye, in the fearful. And in parenthesis, material existence. Ku, degraded. Sharira, bodies. Brita, carrying. It's very interesting. Sometimes in the Sanskrit, there's words there that are common words in the English language. And then you look at what the words mean. It's quite interesting. Years ago, I knew this girl. Her name was Kim. She was like a partner or a close friend. And Kim in Sanskrit means what, or what was it? What, or I can't remember. The other. Yeah, what, who, or it's kind of like, it's like a questioning sort of thing. And she was that kind of person. She was always a questioning kind of person. So I found it really interesting, the correlation between the Sanskrit translation of her name and the nature of the person. And we see many words are like that in Sanskrit. Quite interesting indeed. Translation. When this human body is used for your devotional service, it acts as one's self, friend, and beloved. But unfortunately, although you always show mercy to the conditioned souls and affectionately help them in every way, and although you are their true self, people in general fail to delight in you. Instead, they commit spiritual suicide by worshipping illusion. Alas, because they persistently hope for success in their devotion to the unreal, they continue to wander about this greatly fearful world, assuming various degraded bodies. Please repeat. When this human body is used for your devotional service, it acts as one's self, friend, and beloved. But unfortunately, although you always show mercy to the conditioned souls and affectionately help them in every way, and although you are their true self, people in general fail to delight in you. Instead, they commit spiritual suicide by worshipping illusion. Alas, because they persistently hope for success in their devotion to the unreal, they continue to wander about this greatly fearful world, assuming various degraded bodies. So another powerful statement here by the Vedas in their prayers when they're waking the Lord. We see in the previous verse that the Vedas have discussed the position of the greatly elevated soul, and how they give up everything just simply for the satisfaction of Krishna. And of course, there are many, many examples in our spiritual line, and most notably, we see the picture of them up there, the six Goswamis. And there's a very interesting verse that Prabhupada would often recite. Many, many times he recited this verse. Chakta tu namashesha mandala patishre nim sada tu chava butva dina ganesha ya kuruna ya kopina kanta shuto. So he's saying how butva dina, so butva dina, they're very sort of merciful upon the fallen. Dina ganeshaya karunaya. Wrong verse. Chakta tuma, chakta tuna mashesha mandala. Mandala pati, they're very, very wealthy. We see that Raghunath Das Goswami came from an incredibly wealthy situation. You know, Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis were the prime minister and the treasurer of the Nawab Hussein Shah, who was the ruler of the greater part of India. So, you know, prime minister, he could do anything he wanted. Yeah? And Prabhupada describes how, in this verse, it's described how Shrenim Sada Tuchavat. So Sada means everything. Tuchavat. They gave it up like it was insignificant, nothing. And they said, Kopina Kanta Shuto. They actually they just simply wore a loincloth and they had the beads around Kanta. This Kanti mala, they had beads around their neck. They gave up all this fabulously wealthy situation and simply just took up the devotional service of Krishna. So we see here in the previous verse, it's discussing that how they renounce the happiness of home and family because of their association with devotees who are like flocks of swans enjoying your lotus feet. So also this is pointed out how in the material world that people see that this family life is everything. They see it as being the essence of all enjoyment. There's a nice verse by Prahlad Maharaj. This is Yan Maituna Griha Medi Sukham Hitucham. Kandanu yena. Kandanu yena karaya dukkha dukkam. So it's describing how this yan maitunadi, this means basically sex, you know, sex life, sex desire. Griha medi. So there's two types of, Srila Prabhupada discusses this regularly, about how there's two types of people living in household life. There's one is called the Grihastha. So this is called Grihastha Ashram. It means they take shelter of the ashram of married life in order to develop themselves in devotional service, in order to surrender to Krishna more and more. They're using the facilities offered by Grihastha Ashram to serve Krishna. And then the other is what is called a Griha Medi. And they use the facilities offered by the Grihastha life or married life in order to indulge their senses, in order to enjoy their lives, particularly in terms of sex life. So this is called Griha Medhi. And they're actually thinking that this sex enjoyment is the be-all and end-all. This is everything. This is the greatest thing in this life. And you don't have to look very far to see people who think like that. Practically every single billboard in this city has one topic, one theme. They're just using the material body. They're using this sex desire to sell a product. I remember years ago seeing an advertisement for a chainsaw. And there's this girl, this little girl standing there in a bikini holding a chainsaw. I mean, I used to live in a logging district and I never saw any girls in bikinis out there chopping trees down. You know, they're like big, tough, burly men. You know, there's no like practical connection between this girl in a bikini and someone chopping a tree down with a chainsaw. But the connection is made because sex sells. If you use sex to advertise something, it sells. So we see actually the whole materialistic world is geared up in this way. They're using sex to sell their product because they understand that everyone is completely attached, is completely addicted to enjoying themselves through sex life. So this is Griha Medhi. They're using the facility offered by their life simply to enjoy sex life. And Prahlad Maharaj, he says, Sukham, this Sukham means happiness. Sukham hi tucham, insignificant. It's nothing. And he says, kandamiyena karyo dukkha dukkham. So he says, kandamiyena, it means like rubbing your hands to relieve an itch. Yeah? It's just like you rub your hand to relieve an itch. He said, that's how significant it is. It's nothing really, but it's just the pushings of the material body. And we see, as Krishna points out in the Gita, to Arjuna, when Arjuna, he's lamenting about, oh, you know, all my relatives are on the other side, this is, I cannot do this, it's too difficult, you know. And Krishna says, Matra spasas to kunteya sitoshna sukha dukkata agamapiyino nittashtang tikshvasa. But he says the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress are just like the appearance and disappearance of summer and winter seasons, and they arise from sense perception. So, he says, and one must learn to tolerate these things without being disturbed. So there's so many pushings that are coming from the senses. This is what the senses, that's their business. It is, you know, you have five senses, and then there's the objects of the senses. Actually, there's 10, 11 senses is this determined. There's five knowledge acquiring senses, there's five working senses, and then there's the mind, which is counted as the 11th sense. This is in Sankhya Yoga, it divides in 24 elements, you know. So there's the objects of the senses, there's knowledge acquiring senses. I've forgotten the Sanskrit terminology for it. Then there's the working senses, there's the mind, and I forgot the five other things. There's the intelligence, false ego, etc. like that. So the senses, when they come into object with their, you know, into contact with the objects of the senses, then they, as it's saying here, they don't delight in Krishna, they delight in the objects of the senses. Yeah? Just like there's a new store in the city, so I went in to have a look at this store yesterday, and you see the way it's laid out, this new Telstra store that's in the corner of Burke and Swanson Street. Very big shop, you know, and it's like the way it's laid out, it looks very attractive. You know, they structure these things in such a way so that people will go in there, and they're offering, if you want to make a free phone call to someone, just go in there and grab one of their phones and make a phone call. You can call anyone you like with it, no charge. Yeah? This is all just to lure you into the shop, right? And you can use this thing and say, oh, this is really good, oh, I'm going to buy this. You actually don't need it. Yeah? But they use this like a, just like I remember Sridhar Maharaj, he was doing some research into different ways of how to promote ISKCON, and he came across all these interesting videos on marketing techniques that they use in supermarkets and things like that. So it's just like it used to be years ago that everything was well, before that it was different, but like, you know, in recent times, everything was packaged. You know, you bought a 5 kg of this and a 2 kg of this, that, like that. And even the strawberries, they all came in punnets. And they realized that, you know, they sell a punnet of strawberries for like, I don't know what it was, but it was, you know, they're not cheap. And when people, they look at the little packet and they think, oh, this is really expensive for such a little box. So what they realized, if they just put them there, loosely packed, no package, just loosely in the box, right? And then people can actually feel them and see them and smell them and stuff like that. And they start, oh, that's a nice one, that's a nice one, that's a nice one. They just keep picking all that. And before they know, they've got three times what they normally would have bought. Because the senses are being engaged. The senses are connecting with the objects of the senses. The mind becomes attached. Huh? It's just like, you know, like devotees, when they distribute books, they have a classic technique, is they put the book into the person's hand. As soon as a person's got something, they don't want to let go because they become attached. It's that quick. As soon as the senses come into contact with the objects of the senses, immediately the mind of a person who's not controlled becomes attached. So that's when they do marketing, they look at these things. How can you make the person attach that object so they're forced to buy it? So they have these shops, they make everything. You know, you go into like, even you go to the milk bar up the road here, you look at the display cabinets they have. Lots of shiny glass, lots of shiny metal. They make the thing look very attractive. You go any shop you go into, their whole business is to make the product look as attractive as possible, even though it's like just a pile of plastic and glass. Just to make it look as attractive as it possibly can, so your senses are allured. So that's what the senses are like in this world. They're always trying to contact with the objects of the senses. And when they come into contact with the objects of the senses, then the jiva experiences, at least the jiva is thinking, they're experiencing delight. This is wonderful. This is what I've been looking for. But actually, as it's being pointed out here in this verse, that they're actually, it says, alas, Alas is like a lamentation. The Vedas are lamenting because Krishna, out of his kindness, is making so much arrangement for the jiva to come back to devotional service. And you know, just look at it. How many different arrangements has Krishna made over the millenniums for the jivas to actually, you know, give up their materialistic way of life and take up the process of devotional service? There's so many. I mean, even if you look in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, I forgot which chapter it is. I think it's probably about maybe 5 or 6. It describes the different incarnations. Huh? Third chapter is okay. And in there, I think you see that Krishna and Balaram are listed as the 23rd and 24th. So before them, there's so many incarnations. Then after them, there's so many incarnations. And what are these incarnations for? What's the purpose of these incarnations? Simply, as Krishna says, Paratanaya sananam vinaschaya cha duskritam dharma sangstapanataya sambhavami yuge yuge. He says, to deliver the pious and annihilate the miscreants, as well as to re-establish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. So Krishna just keeps coming again and again and again, simply to give the living entities the opportunity to render devotional service, simply to give us, all of us, the opportunity to give up this worthless material life and take shelter of the process of devotional service, which is, as it's saying here, it's very interesting, it says, although you are their true self. So this is not Mayavadi philosophy, not saying that the jiva is Krishna and Krishna is the jiva. Because you know, Krishna says, Mayata Tamidam Savam Jaka Vyaktamurtina Machtani Sabhabhutani Na Chaham Teshu Vastaha, that by me, my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. He's saying, by my energies I pervade. But he's saying, you know, that you are their true self. I take this to mean that actually, you know, serving Krishna, this is the nature of the jiva. This is our true nature. This is what we're supposed to do. This is what, you know, when we're actually in this situation, this is when we're truly experiencing ourself in its natural form. This is when the living entity becomes truly satisfied, is when the living entity is in this natural condition of serving Krishna. Because as it said, the jiva is by nature a servant. And we see that everyone is serving somebody. It always reminds me of a song I used to listen to a long time ago. It may be the devil, it may be the Lord, but you've got to serve someone. So we see that everyone in this world is engaged in serving somebody. You know, either they're serving their family, they're serving their boss, they're serving their nation, they're serving humanity, or they're serving cats and dogs, whatever. And you see them. I mean, you don't think people serve cats and dogs? Just have a look around here. Dog passes a stool, they pull out the little plastic bag and they pick it up. Is that service? The mother does it to the child, people are doing it to the dogs. So somebody, everyone's engaged in some kind of service. And because this is the intrinsic nature of the jiva, is to serve. But not to serve all these, as Prahlad Maharaj points out, Atmasanyashu, what's that verse? Asatsu api. These fallible soldiers. Asat, it means they're temporary or inauspicious. Everyone is serving these, they have these fallible relationships, these temporary relationships in this world. And they're putting they're investing their lives into serving these fallible relationships. They're investing all their energy, all their finances, and indeed their very lives into serving these short-lived, temporary relationships which ultimately produce misery. This is pointed out in the Gita. It says this material world is dukkalayam ashashvatam, that everything in this world is by nature temporary and full of misery. And because we're investing so much energy into these temporary relationships, we're experiencing so much misery. And the living entities are frustrated in their endeavors to enjoy, continuously frustrated. Doesn't matter what endeavor they're making, you know, ultimately they become frustrated because they're investing their time, their energy, and their affections into temporary manifestations. And you know what it's like when you invest your time into something temporary, you become frustrated because why? It breaks. It comes to an end. You know? Just like, you know, we invest so much energy into loving relationships with computers. I mean, people really get into their computers. I mean, some people are at their computer all day, all night. You know, I remember my wife has some friends that she's known since school, right? What grade were you with Pearl? Long time. I mean, like maybe 40 years or so, right? Yeah. Fifty something years he's known this person. So one, they were down here in Melbourne year before last, and they asked us, you know, we went out with them, and so they had a friend of theirs with them, and the friend had the child, and the child's sitting there, and he's got one of those little video games, you know, it's like this the whole time, you know, people are talking to him, and he just didn't look up, you know, just the whole time he's just doing this, you know. And then his mother at one point just, okay, this is enough, and she took the game from him, and he's like this for the rest of the time, you know. He wasn't happy that we took this, you know. He's just investing his whole sort of focus into this little box, you know? Which ultimately, what does it do? What's the outcome of investing your time and energy into this thing? Maybe you get RSI in your thumbs, that's about it. But what's the outcome of it? Nothing. There's no positive product from it, you know. And actually, there are studies that they've done that seem to be indicating that people's minds become, they think of, you know, the idea is it makes them sharper, but actually mind becomes duller. And their social skills are greatly diminished because they don't know how to interact with people. And we're seeing, you watch, you know, as the time develops, you know, as Kali Yuga progresses, people's social skills become more and more diminished, and people will be less and less able to interact. And there's so much evidence of this already. How many violent crimes are there? How many people, you know, how many times are there murders, etc.? You know, which a lot of it gets down to you know, just they don't have the social skills. They don't know how to interact with people. You know, like someone's driving down the road, someone cuts you off, pull out a gun and shoot him. This happens in the US all the time. I don't know if it happens here or not yet, but I'm sure it will come. Road rage is quite a common thing. You know, someone does something on the road, and I can understand, in one sense, I can understand why people get frustrated, you know, because they go to work in the morning, they go to work home at night, and what do? They're sitting in a traffic jam for 2 hours. Each way. Really frustrating. And some of the people, when they drive in these traffic jams, the way they drive is really out of control. Cut people off, they drive up on the footpath, they drive down, they do all sorts of, you know, dangerous things. And people get frustrated. And because of diminished social skills, they don't know how to interact with each other, then they lose their cool. They shoot people, they beat people up, you know, they do all sorts of horrible things. Yeah? And as Kali Yuga progresses, you'll see. Because people don't know how to interact with people, they take shelter of these fallible soldiers, they take shelter of machines, they take shelter of things that they cannot have, you know, a personal experience with, a social experience with. Therefore, even like simple things, I remember, like, you know, my handwriting years ago used to be sort of reasonable, you know, people could read it. And then I got a computer. I thought, this is great, because then I can send, you know, type out letters and stuff and print it out, and then people can read it easily, very easily. So my handwriting diminished as a result of that. And then I got this a PDA, and like with a PDA, you don't write in normal letters. You have to write in different letters. And so I can see how my writing's degraded even more because I'm using that. And we see that, you know, just all these different things. You know, like people are. Because they think they're sort of, you know, doing things in a better way, because they think they're achieving more and more by all these devices, which actually cause us to lose various skills that are quite common, such as writing, interacting with people, you know, normal communications. All these different things are forcing us to lose all these, you know, the personal skills and personal development. So we see that in Kali Yuga, people are becoming more and more frustrated because of the way things are developing. And it's not like it's kind of like, you know, the modes of nature, they push us along in this way because we're affected by, particularly by Rajagun in this age, Raja and Tama. Then people are more and more pushed by this intense activity, this intense desire to enjoy. Really intense desires to enjoy. Yet, as Krishna points out in the Gita, where does passion take us? It always ends in distress. The mode of passion always ends in distress. Goodness always ends in enlightenment. And ignorance ends in madness and delusion. And you see that actually in this age, there are more and more crazy people around. And there's just so many crazy people around. You know, be around the temple in the evening on a full moon. So many crazies come. You get these, some of these people coming from St Kilda. I mean, some of them are not very, you know, some of them are nice people, but some of them are very mentally imbalanced. And they, you know, it's just the effect of the age. And we see that, you know, you just look at the headlines in the newspapers, see some of the things that are going on in this world. They're getting more and more degraded. And it's just a result of the age. Because people are giving up the shelter of Krishna. And it's described here in this section that, you know, Krishna is making so much arrangement. It's saying, even here in this verse, it's saying, you know, you always show mercy to the conditioned souls. Krishna is constantly making arrangements, you know, for the living entities to come back to him, to come back to the spiritual world, to take up the practice of devotional service. But because they're so ignorant, they're so foolish, they just, no, this is not what it's all about. This is not what life's all about. This is not the goal of life. As I was discussing on Saturday, we see that you know, when you present a simple thing like Krishna consciousness to the living entity, how easy it is to practice Krishna consciousness. A simple philosophy, you're not the body, the soul, you're a servant of Krishna. That is just so simple and easy to understand. People don't accept it. Why? Because it's too simple. It's got to be more difficult than that. And then if you present some really difficult, like mind-twisting, esoteric philosophy, oh yes, this is the truth. Tattvamasi, you are that. You know, all these, you know, all these different types of yoga that people are presenting, all these difficult things that they're presenting, then they accept it. Oh, this must be the truth. Why? Because it's very hard to understand. You know, we've got to meditate on the within. They don't give any like finite, you know, like one yogi was saying, you know, you don't meditate on Krishna, you meditate on the within Krishna. What is the within Krishna? Oh, that you must make advancement to understand. No, Krishna within without is the same, because he's absolute. And that, you know, these people, they claim, you know, that they've performed the yoga, they claim to have some understanding, but actually they have no understanding. They have a materialistic understanding. And ultimately you find that the many of these people, they pursue their devotional, they pursue their spiritual path simply as a means to negate material suffering, because they realize they're suffering and they don't want to suffer. So they think, yes, I'll just give it all up, I'll renounce it all, and that will solve my suffering. But no, what can you renounce? You're going to renounce your desires? People have desires. We need to learn how to spiritualize our desires. And by giving up the body, this is not giving up the desire. The desire will always be there, because the living entity has desire. A sentient being means one who has senses. You have senses means you have desires. You have existence. You know, you can't give up, as long as you have existence, you can't give up desire. So to think that if I just give up my desires and everything will be okay is foolishness. It's utter foolishness. But this is what we find with the impersonalists and Mayavadis. This is how this is what their motivation is to give up this suffering condition of life. And Prabhupada says that you know, they see that, oh, I have a body, this is giving me suffering. Therefore, that conditioning where there is no suffering means I have no body. But they don't see the difference between a spiritual body and a material body. Yes, material body is going to give suffering. But spiritual body, it doesn't mean no body. See, the way they look at things is like they see that material and spiritual are opposite. They see that sense, but they don't see the similarity. You know, in that, you know, you have a material body. The material body causes suffering. They think, okay, body causes suffering. Therefore, I get rid of the body. I get rid of suffering. But no, because the living entity has desires, the living entity is active, you need a vehicle to satisfy your desires. You need a vehicle for your activity. And when you're in unembodied, when you're, you know, just like, you know, in your unembodied form, or when you merge into the Brahman, which is what they're seeking, how do you satisfy desires? How do you engage in activity? How do you have relationships? Most important thing for a jiva is relationships. And we see in every species of life there is some kind of relationship. And this is where the living entity finds satisfaction, is in relationships. And they're always looking for relationships. But without a body, if you're in an unembodied form, meaning, you know, you've merged into Brahman, how are you going to do this? How are you going to satisfy your desires? How are you going to have activity? And how are you going to have relationships? Not possible. They've misunderstood. They're thinking body means material. Or when they hear that Krishna is Nirguna, They think this means that Krishna has no form, because it means no quality. Quality means form. That's what they're saying. But that nirguna means no material quality. He has no, and it says in the Upanishads that he has no legs, you know, things like he has no legs but he can walk faster than all others running, he has no hands but he can reach to a far distant place. It says all these different types of things. But what is it saying there? It's saying he has no material hands, he has no material legs, he has no material body, but he does have spiritual hands, he does have spiritual legs and a spiritual body. So in the same way, for the living entity, we have spiritual senses, we have a spiritual form. And this is how we achieve satisfaction, is by using this spiritual form in the service of Krishna. So due to their conditioned nature, and because of illusion, actually there's in the fifth canto, 555, there's a verse there. I don't remember the beginning of it, but in the end of the second line, Prabhupada is this abodha jata. Prabhupada quotes this so often in conversations, particularly in India. He talks about this abodha jata. This means like buddhi means intelligence, or, you know, and abodha means without intelligence. So he's saying because people are abodha jata, because they're foolish, they have no intelligence at all. Actually, I'll just read this to you. It's quite a nice verse. This fifth canto is quite. I've got to sort of adjust it so I can read it. There's another misery of material life is, you know, senses start to fail when you get past 50. And this writing is very, very tiny. So it says, Parabhavas tavat abodajata yavanna jigyaseta atma sattvam. So Lord Rishabhdev is saying here, as long as one does not inquire about spiritual values of life, one is defeated and subject to miseries arising from ignorance. So this is the thing, living entities in this world, if they don't know about Krishna, if they don't know about their relationship with Krishna, they're in ignorance. And that's the situation of practically everyone. They're in ignorance. They're thinking that they are the body. Aham mameti, I am this body. But actually they don't realize that aham brahmasmi, that I am the spirit soul, I am a servant of Krishna. Be it sinful or pious, karma has no resultant actions. If a person is engaged in any kind of karma, his mind is called karmatmaka, colored with fruitive activity. As long as the mind is impure, consciousness is unclear. And as long as one is absorbed in fruitive activity, he has to accept a material body. So the activities that the jiva performs is what causes the jiva to take on these material bodies, as Rishabhdev talks in Nayam Deho Deha Bhajam Riko Niloke Kastan Karman Ahate Vidbujamye. That the living entity, he actually says the jiva should not have taken on a body. It's not right, you know, for us to be situated in a material body. This is not our natural or our original condition. But because of material desires, we're forced to take on a material body. Because of our activities. So, you know, people may complain about, oh, this, that, and the other thing, you know, but, you know, thinking that, you know, it's happened by, you know, by the arrangement of some evil god or something, you know, someone who's not, you know, got our best interests at heart. But actually, no, this has come about because of our activities, because of our desires, as Krishna also clearly points out in the 8th chapter of the Gita, I think 8, verse 5 and 6, where he mentions... true in mind, I tell you. Sorry about that. They're very simple verses, but you know. Krishna's ante kala chamam eva smaran mukva kalevaram. So whatever state of being you remember, smaram. Memory, remember, it says, antakale, at the end of the body. Whatever state of being you remember, that state you retain without fail. And then, the one saying, you know, if you remember that at the end of life, then you'll achieve me. And then the next verse says, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tyajati antakale ravam. So, you know, wherever your mind is, whatever you're remembering when you leave the body, that's where you go in your next life. And then he talks in the seventh chapter about the seventh chapter or the ninth chapter? About those who worship the demigods, they go to the planets of the demigods. Those who worship the ghosts and spirits, but those who worship me, they live with me. So by the activities we perform in our life, that is what will take us. We cannot rely on at the end of life, I will just remember Krishna then and go back to Godhead. This is not something you can do accidentally. This is something that happens by the arrangement of Krishna. So many times, actually years ago, this is really interesting. This happened here in Australia. In South Head in Sydney, when you go in, Sydney, right? It's called South Head, is it? I think. The opening into the main harbour there, you've got the North Head and South Head. So it's quite high. I can't remember how high it is, but it's well over 100 feet high. And there's kind of like a rock ledge down the bottom there, quite a large rock area. So there was this fellow, I think he was probably a little bit crazy, and he was suffering a lot in the material world, and he wanted to go back home to Godhead. So he thought, what I'll do is I'll jump off South Head chanting Hare Krishna. You heard this story? Okay, so he did that. He jumped off South Head. He was chanting Hare Krishna all the way down, and he landed in a pool of water. Okay, and he didn't die. So he was trying to, get the easy way out, so to speak. But actually, you can't force the issue. You can't go back home to God. You can't sort of sneak your way into the back door. You can't do that. You actually have to achieve the qualification. You have to be invited by Krishna. And Krishna's making so much arrangement, as it's pointing out here. He's making so much arrangement for us to go back home to Godhead. But we need to follow the bona fide authorized process. We need to actually, like Krishna has given us this wonderful process, You just chant Hare Krishna and be happy. And there's an interesting lecture Prabhupada he's saying this process of devotional service is so simple. He said, you chant, dance, you take prasadam. And still that we cannot do. That's all it is. You chant, you dance, you take prasadam. If we could just do that perfectly, then we go back home to Godhead. But somehow or other we get distracted by so many different things. So it's a very simple process. And it's the very means whereby we can overcome disillusion of the material world. It's the only means, actually. As Lord Chaitanya points out, he says, Harinama, 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 Evikevalam, Kaloro, Nasti Eva, Nasti Eva, Nasti Eva, Nasti Eva, Katiranyata. But in this age, there's no other process for overcoming this very difficult age. It's the most difficult of ages, Kali Yuga. But it's also the most fortunate of ages. Because in other ages, the process of spiritual life was much more difficult than it is now. Previously you had to, Kriti Yad Jayato Vishnu, you had to sit down and meditate for thousands of years. Aranyakashipu meditated for, 10,000 years? Valmiki for 30,000 years. Can you imagine sitting down meditating upon Vishnu for 30,000 years? Who can do that? Don't even live that long. So he sat down and meditated for 30,000 years and achieved perfection in that way. And this is Tretiyam Yajito Makai. Then in Treta Yuga, the next stage, the performance of Yajna. And not like the yagyas we do these days with this little tin can thing they put the fire pit in and a bucket of dirty sand from the beach and all that sort of stuff, and this second-hand firewood you buy from the service station, which is chopped up boxes and things like that, with nails and all sorts of stuff like that, and we have like a little container of ghee. No, the yagya kuns were made when Yudhisthira Maharaj, when he performed the Rajasuya Yagya, he had Krishna told, because you need a lot of gold to perform these yagyas, so Krishna told Arjuna where there was a mountain of gold, mountain tip of gold that was from a previous yagya. So Arjuna went and got all this gold, because the kund, where they actually do the yagya, is made from gold. All the implements are made from gold. I remember a few years ago we were at Radharaman. Were you at Radharaman when we saw that for Janmashtami that year? Well, that's the year you were sick, right? I went to Radharaman temple, and they were doing a Janmashtami. Was it Janmashtami or the appearance of Radharaman? I can't remember. Anyway, they're doing this Abhishek, and everything they used in the Abhishek was solid silver. Solid silver. It had these lotus about this big, or you know, kalashas about this big. Solid silver, very beautiful. When we do the Abhishek here, we do bring out plastic buckets. Yeah? I'm not criticizing anybody, but just, you know, this is how Kali Yuga is diminishing. And we see that in the previous ages, when they did these yagyas, everything was solid gold. You know, the fire pit was gold, all the spoons were gold, all the pots, you know, they put the coconut, they installed the deity, was all gold, everything gold. And at the end of the yagya, they gave it all away. Yeah? Just give everything away. Yeah. So, you know, we can't do that in this age. And then it says in Dwapara Yuga, Dwapare Paricharya Yam, deity worship. But deity worship on a different scale from what we do here. Completely on a different scale. Of course, our worship in Kali Yuga is probably the most opulent you'll see. Very, very opulent worship. Yet, previously the deities were worshipped. You can read, there's a book by Tamal Krishnamurti called the Jagannath Priya Natakam, and it's describing the deity of Nilamara. See, in this day of Brahma, the life of Brahma, the first half of the life of Lord Brahma, they worship a deity called Nilamadava, and the second half, the main deity is Jagannath. Jagannath is a very significant deity, not just, you know, one they worship in Puri, but he's the main deity for this last half of Lord Brahma's life. He'd be around for the rest of Brahma's life. Very important deity. This Nilamadava, he was worshipped by the demigods, and the demigods would come down and they would worship with very, very opulent offerings, incredibly opulent offerings, and, you know, no plastic beads and things like that, you know, or glass, but all like gold and silver and you know, gems and things like that. Very, very opulent worship. So again, that kind of worship we can't perform. But in this age it says Kaladhad Hari Kirtanat, that whatever benefit you got in these other ages by this very, very opulent worship, in this age of Kali Yuga, you get the same benefit simply by chanting Hare Krishna. It mentions that this is Kale Dosha Nidhi Raja Nasti Hieko Mahadgunad Kitana Devi Krishna Sha Mukta Sangha Param Brajet. But this age of Kali, it's an ocean of faults. There's so many problems in this age. Just unlimited. It's this ocean. Dosha Nidhi, it says, you know, ocean of faults. Everything you see in this age is, you know, some fault, some inebriety or discrepancy is there on everything. And it's getting worse and worse and worse. And that's the nature of this age. But simply, he said, Asti hi eko mahan guna. But actually there's one great quality. Eko mahad guna. One eko means one. Mahad guna, great quality in this age. Kirtanareva Krishna sha mukta sangapara. That just chanting kirtan, just chanting eva Krishna sha. Certainly Krishna's name, yeah? Mukta sangha parambhaja. You become liberated or freed from this material association, mukta sangha, parambrajat, and you achieve the supreme destination. So Krishna has given us so much facility, even though we have so many inebrities, even though we have so many disqualifications, he's given us so much facility for spiritual life. He's given us the chanting of Hare Krishna, he's given us the worship of the deities, he's given us Krishna Prasad, the association of devotees, you know, saintly persons, the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam is so glorious. Simply, you know, it says Krishna Swadhamva Dhamagani Kalo Nashta Drisham. It says this Bhagavad Purana is as brilliant as the sun. A person who has lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in this age of Kali shall get light from this Purana. They actually can see reality. It's from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we have so much facility for spiritual life, yet still foolishly the living entities don't accept. Still foolishly we cling on to our attachments and think that there's something better. But there's nothing better than spiritual life, because it is our constitutional nature to serve Krishna. And if we're able to just, you know, immerse ourselves in this spiritual life, then we'll actually, you know, and it's kind of interesting here, because the Vedas are saying, because they persistently hope for success in their devotion to the unreal. It's hope against hope. They're hoping they actually squeeze a bit of enjoyment out of it. But it's just that they're frustrated in all these hopes, which is pointing. They continue to wander about this greatly fearful world, assuming various degraded bodies. as we, that's like we are Purushaka Praktihisti, Bhukti Prakti, Karanam Guna Sangasa, Sad Asad Yoni Janmasu. The meeting with various auspicious and inauspicious species of life due to their association with the modes of material nature. So that's the situation in this material world. And through the process of devotional service, the living entity can actually overcome this inauspicious Sangha and proceed very quickly back to their original constitutional nature. Okay, I'll finish there. Anyone has any questions?
I had a realization, I had a realization concerning the mantra that was dominant in such a universe where the Lord of the was such old ones. In the Kali Yuga, our consciousness draws would be in that same purity, working with the falsehoods around us. So the Prabhupada has actually set up a little bit that.
Well, Prabhupada did say the golden age would come again, but that depends on us. The acharyas they point out, that there's nothing more wonderful. Even Krishna, Sukadeva Goswami, he says it's the most auspicious activity in the entire universe, able to uproot the reactions to even the greatest sins. We hear some of the acharyas they pray is like, there's so much nectar in the holy name. I only have 2 ears and 1 mouth. How can I possibly experience this nectar? They're praying for thousands of years and thousands of mouths to actually relish the nectar of the holy name. So if we can just take shelter of the holy name, then we will achieve all success in spiritual life. Anything else? Okay, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Samaveta Bhaktivrinda Ki Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Nitai Gopremanandi Hari Bol.